Session number 17626, Mr. Thomas Lawton, Reel 8.
Mr. Lawton, Reel 8. Yeah, we're talking about the influx of militiamen that were coming in and your own part in that. You mentioned the ballroom. Was that Chesterley Street?
Chesterley Street, the Empire Ballroom in Chesterley Street. A place where I had danced many hours away. And I had to go there and take over. And the officer who was sitting on a chair with his feet on the table said, "Oh, hello." And he looked like he didn't know what to say. I said, "Actually, sir, it's the Sergeant Major." "The Sergeant Major?" "Ah." I said, "If you look at my crown, it hasn't any laurel wreaths on it." "Oh." "Well," I said, "that's a very old rank. In the First World War," I said, "they wore these crowns. But," I said, "the point is, I'm a warrant officer, class 3, platoon Sergeant Major. So it is correct to address me as Sergeant Major, but platoon Sergeant Major. Not company sergeant major." And then he threw me, it was either a Milky Way or a Mars bar, so he says, "Do you like them?" I said, "I've never had one." He says, "You want to eat them? They're full of good stuff." And then he said to me, where do you live, platoon sergeant major?" I says, "Burnley, sir." "Ah, Sergeant Major Bradley lives in Burnley." I said, "That's right, sir." He says, "And will your wife be coming down here regularly?" I said, "She better not." "What?" I said, "She better not." I said, "Why do you ask that, sir?" He says, "Because Sergeant Major Bradley's wife used to come regular. I think she ran the company." Anyhow, the militiamen came in. The first batch that came in, there would be maybe a couple of dozen of them. There was 100, 250 coming. About a couple of dozen came in with a sergeant, Heaviside. Just a little dark lad who had a brother, Michael Heaviside, who was a big lad. And Michael Heaviside and Norman were sons of Michael Heaviside, VC, from Concert, or Stanley. They were two good lads. And when Norman came in, I said, "Where have you been?" I said, "What time it is?" He says, "Aye, 8 o'clock. I said, "Where have you been?" He says, "Everywhere." He says, "Do you know what? We've been on the road since 9 o'clock this morning, travelling all the way from Darlington." I said, "You what?" By the time they all came in, it was getting very late. And when I looked at them with their suitcases, one thing and another, poor little fellas, yeah. There's some big fellas among them. Anyway, they all told the same story. They had nothing to eat since 9 o'clock that morning. I went upstairs into what used to be the ballroom kitchens. And I said to the cook, Sergeant, "How long will it take you to dish up about 250 good, solid meals for 250 starving lads?" He said, "Give us an hour." And within the hour, they all had big mugs of tea. They sat down in their suitcases, not on the floor, big mugs of tea, and then they were told, "Collect." And what they did get was two of the biggest sandwiches you ever saw with beef, about an inch thick beef. They did really have a good solid meal. That night, we had a veranda where the sergeants used to sleep. I stood on the veranda about 2 o'clock in the morning. I looked down at the ballroom. I had one blanket to lie on, one blanket to pull over them, and most of them had to sleep with their heads on their suitcases. And I couldn't help but say, "Poor souls. Yesterday, last night, they'll be going to bed. God knows where they'll be going shortly after this." But they turned out to be very good lads. At the first parade they had, I held the parade in what is the marketplace. It was then the marketplace at Chester. All in civvies. I said, "Now, all I want you to do is to stand close to each other And if you can get into threes, that's one behind the other in threes, looking at me, that'll be what we'll call threes, in line of threes. Then I'm going to say right turn. Anybody here who doesn't know his right from his left? I says, any Boy Scouts? Aye. Right. I says, you'll know what to do. Just follow the Boy Scouts. I said, right turn, quick march. And I says, there'll be a sergeant in front of you, just follow him. But try to march. You know, left, right, left, right. Because you're going down through Chesterley Street, and then you're going along the Burns and up into the council houses, because I'm going to show you the quick way to get back to camp when you've overdone it at night time. So we had a guide went out to stop the traffic. We came down from the marketplace on the main street in threes, all in civvies, with the exception of the sergeants and everything. And went down the bottom and people were looking and said, well, what are these? Along the Burns, open to the council houses. I went up a certain avenue and I said, oh, I'm going to say halt and all I want to do is stop, but don't fall down. Right? Halt. Now that's I'm going to say right turn. And you'll all turn right, facing me again. And I said, right opposite you, I've got a brother and his wife living in that house right opposite you, and I'm watching you. And I'm going in now to have a bit of talk with my brother Billy. I says, no, I could say stand easy, but I'm going to just say stand at ease. Stand easy means you can move about. And I don't want to move about, I just want to stop still. But move your heads, talk if you want to. I went in, and my brother's wife was looking out the window, and she says, oh, who are they? I said, they're what you call militia men, brand new. And my brother Billy says, do you think you'll make soldiers of them? I says, aye. I says, and good soldiers. Yeah. I says, they've got 8 weeks intensive training, and I'm supposed to produce from them something that looks like guardsmen, maybe better than guardsmen. I says, as a matter of fact, in 2 weeks' time, I'm bringing them back up here, and I'm stopping them exactly where they are now, for you to see. So I said, I'm going out now, get them on the move again, back to the drill hall, back to the ballroom. And the chief said, oh, poor soul, you know, because she had a son who was actually killed later on during the war. And I went out and I said, lad, left turn. 2 weeks later, the same men in uniform with their rifles at the sling. And I had an awful job with a lot of top brass wanting to march at the slope or march at the shoulder. I said, well, no, at the sling. I says, I've seen troops march at the sling with fixed bayonets. What? Now, I had to tell, we formed threes rather than formed fours because of the sunken roads in France and on the continent. The Continental troops marched like that. So anyway, 2 weeks later, I just said, right, sergeants, get them on parade. They were there. Okay. And I said, now then, I'm going to take you exactly where you went 2 weeks ago. And remember, you are under observation. And people will be saying, they're not the same lads. They are. Right. So keep yourself up there. Remember that badge. Look up. And we went the same route and went along this avenue, the halt in the same place. And I said, no, this time I'm going to say stand easy because I know that you'll not move out of line. And I went in and my brother and his wife were standing there and Billy couldn't believe it. They are the same men, Tom. I says, they are the same men, Billy. But I says, they're about 2 inches taller. Some of them were half a stone heavier. And I says, they're soldiers. I says, they can drill. And I says, they can march. And I says, they can shoot. And I think I told you about how they beat the Hythe
type. Yes, got that.
I says, they've got inventive minds, Billy. They're not brainwashed. I says, and if they think something, they'll tell you. And if they think you could, why do we do this? They'll say, well, why do we do this? See? And you've got to be able to tell them why you do it. Although you might say, mine personally, I think it's a lot of rubbish, but we've got to do it because that's according to the military training. Right? And so, anyhow, those men, they became outstanding. I was proud of them. Especially when I thought of the territorialists. See? Who were good lads. But these men came into the army, well, forced into the army, came in as civilians, and within 8 weeks, they were soldiers who could go anywhere and to prove themselves right through as being very good lads.
They would go through the same basic training that you'd gone through.
Absolutely. And, you know, an offshoot from them were the Bevan boys. And while these lads as militia men were good lads, the Bevan boys proved themselves to be good lads down the pits. I remember a priest said to me once, you know, the best thing I ever did was become a Bevan boy. He said, I went into the pits. He was training for the priesthood. He went into the pits and he says, I saw more of life and men in the pits than I would ever see from the pulpit. So the civilian is a good man once you get a hold of him and give a little bit pride. And just as the soldiers had pride, the Bevan boys had pride.
Can you take me through what a platoon sergeant major did, your duties?
Yes. Well, it meant that I was in charge of a platoon, okay? So just as a company sergeant major carried on with a company, the platoon sergeant major carried on with the platoon. In other words, we kept the nominal rules, we kept all details of the men, we had a board with their names on, and we taught them right from the first how to stand to attention up until we got to platoon training. And when you got to platoon training, you're then dealing with the various movements that you would make on platoon drill, and also you were explaining to them military vocabulary. For instance, down in Chesterley Street, the men were out, my company of men was out with sergeants, and I was passing along by, and there was a sergeant who says, Sergeant Major, what? Would you come here, please? I went. He says, what is that? And he pointed to a bushy top tree, which means it's a tree with a stalk on and a bush on the top. I says, that is a bushy top tree. There you are, he said to one of these men, I told you. This lad says, it's not, it's an apple tree. I says, an apple tree? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, no, I says, we have three trees in military vocabulary. We have a bushy top tree, that's one, with a stalk on. We have the pine tree, which is obvious, and we have a hedgerow. And if I say to you, I say to the men, right, apple tree in front, five rounds fire. Some bloke will say, where's the apple tree? That's it. I says, it's not an apple tree, it's a bushy top tree. He says, it's not some, is it? It's an apple tree. I says, right, Sergeant, let's go here. We walked about 200 yards, apple tree. He says, yeah, totally. Yes, but I says, listen, you're the only man in the British Army that knew that was an apple tree, or is an apple tree. And we had to explain. It's no good me saying apple tree in front. It's a bushy top tree. So, all manner of military training, all the different words and what they meant was necessary to be taught to the platoon. And each platoon was at that time formed of four sections, and each section, of course, had its section leader. Now, a chap once asked me, he says, well, if you are a warrant officer class 3, what does that mean? I said, it means I'm a sergeant major, a platoon sergeant major. But he says, these are platoon officers. Yes, well, that's the reason for the platoon sergeant major to take the place of the platoon officer who in action only has about 9 days' life. What? So I says, you see, in their wisdom, the powers that be have said that let's promote sergeants, good sergeants, up, give them that crown. And I says, we're platoon sergeant majors. We have a section of men. We take the place of the officer who is a commissioned officer. Ah. And then we had to tell the difference between the platoon sergeant major and the company sergeant major. So, we had a brigade major who was Brigade Major Fenningham, I think it was. Dulali Tap. He'd been in India so long, he had the Dulali Tap. He's a madman, but a very good man. And he once came up to the ballroom, and he found a chap standing talking with his rifle and bayonet, talking to a lass at the corner. And he says to him, what are you doing? Oh, he says, you see all this here? Uh-huh. Well, I'm guarding that. Are you? Uh-huh. He says, I've got a mate round the corner there. And when he went round the corner, he said, I'm marching up the door, see? He says, do you know who I am? He says, a bandmaster. Because he had the BM on his... If there's one thing he didn't like was being called a bandmaster. So little things like that, you see. Now, actually, in their intensive training, these men were not supposed to do any guard duties. But they were taking everything in a stride so much that I thought, well, there's no harm in putting them and telling them what they're doing. And remember, you're responsible for anything that happens around here. Give them a little bit feeling of responsibility. And they swallowed it. But it was just after that, of course, when I was made into a company sergeant major. And that was when I left the militia training and went to Durham A Company to take over as company sergeant major.
How long were you with the militia at the ballroom?
8 weeks, maybe 10.
You did your full training?
Yes, you see, because when they finished their training, they went out to the battalions. But another militia company moved in. And the second militia company that moved in went to Lambton Castle. And I went with them to Lambton Castle for about 2 weeks. So I think I would be with the militia men 3 months, maybe, all told.
Had this complete training unit of militiamen, did it have a name or a number or anything?
No. Just a militia company.
You, as you say, you were getting all kinds of people and basically quite intelligent and easily picked things
yes.
up. You would have, no doubt, problems with one or two of them.
Well, we had the problem. An outstanding example was a lad called Dunn. He worked on the farms. He'd be good at muck spreading. Eh? And you just couldn't do anything with him. But when the 8th Battalion down in Oxford sent up for some men, we sorted out all the rubbish we had, and we sent it down to the 8th Battalion. And they sent them back very quick, including Dunn. Now, there's a chap there, Corporal Bailey, Mosey Bailey. He should never have been in the army. He had a bad back. And when Mosey came back with these chaps, I said, Corporal, go home and come back in about a week's time. Eh? I knew where he lived. So when I was telling him that, this Dunn had heard me telling him that, so he went home. And he never told up. And then that horrible man, that Captain Mosscrop, terrible man, he was hoping to get Dunn on a deserter charge. I says, 48 hours, sir. If he doesn't tell him 48 hours, I says, he's a deserter. And I says, I'm going out to find him. Yeah, what? I said, I'm going out to find him. And I'm taking somebody with me. I learned that he's actually living with a woman. But during the daytime, he was sleeping out in the fields. At night time, he came back there, see. So I went with this chap, another sergeant, I think, found the house, knocked at the door, and when this woman came, she came with a little kiddie, about 4-year-old, and she was biting her fingernails.
Yeah.
And she practically said, "He's not here," before we spoke. So I told her what I was there for, and I said, "Remember this. If Private Dunn doesn't report back to the drill hall in Durham within a certain time, he would be classed as a deserter." And I said, "We are now at war," and they put deserters up against the wall and shot them. Yeah. Anyhow, Dunn came back. I says, "Where have you been?" "Well," he says, you know when you say, "Well, just go home," and didn't come back for about a week. I said, "Who did?" "You did." I said that to Corporal Bailey. "Oh," he said, "I thought you said it." The colonel came through from Chesterley Street to try Dunn. And when the colonel, well, I said, "Right, march him in." I says to Dunn, "When you go in," I says, "Of course, we're taking the hat off, so you can't salute, because you're on a charge. Just stand to attention." I said, "I told you to stand at ease and answer the colonel whatever he asks you." He says, "Which colonel is it?" I says, "Colonel Bramwell." "Oh, I know him. He's a butcher." I says, "You know him?" "Oh, aye." "Well, Colonel Bramwell knew him also, because they were talking like brothers. And Colonel Bramwell says to him, 'Well, look, Private Dunn, when you left here on that day when you came back from the 8th Battalion, where did you go?' 'I went in for a drink, you know, for a pint or two with my mates.' 'And then what did you do?' 'Oh, well, I know a woman, you see, and I went up to see her.' And he says, 'You've been there all the time.' 'Uh-huh.' 'But,' he says, 'why didn't you come back?' 'Why,' he says, 'nobody seemed to care whether I came back or not.' He never said anything about me saying go for a week. Well, the colonel talked to him, and he said, 'Right, now listen, don't do that in the future.' He knew who he's talking to. Good lad on the farm. And the same little fella, we had two officers, couldn't read a map, they got us lost. And the same little Dunn climbed into a haystack for warmth, and German armoured cars came down with incendiaries, and he was burnt to death in a haystack. That was a long time later. But that was Dunn. And as you said, did we have problems? Yes. Private Jones. Good lad, Jones. Good mess worker, working in the mess and that. But when we got the Bren guns, got rid of the Lewis guns, got the Bren gun, and was stripping them and assembling them, not everybody found it very easy, but not Jones. You couldn't knock it into him. I went to Jones and I said to him, 'Listen, come up to my bunk.' I took him up to my bunk. 'Do you know what that is?' 'Bren gun.' 'Uh-huh.' I says, 'What do you know about it?' 'Well, I know how to fire it.' I said, 'Could you take it apart? Put it together again?' 'Well, I might take it apart, but I don't think I'd get it together.' 'Right.' I says, 'I'm going to teach you how to take that apart, name the parts, and put it together again.' I says, 'It'll take 2 or 3 nights, but you come here, right?' 'Uh-huh.' And I told him the drill. When you put that part down there, that's the first part out, that'll be the last one that goes back in. Simple, right? Oh. Well, he became quite proficient. Right? So the men were on with weapon training and so forth and forthwith. The Bren gun. Right, now what we're going to do now is practice the stripping of and assembling of the Bren gun. Naming the parts, etc., etc. I said to the corporal or sergeant, Charlie, said, 'By the way, there's one good man here, Private Jones.' Well, you know, oh, I've got to get this phone here. And this bloke says, "Private, you and Sergeant Mayor?" I said, "Give him a try, eh?" So there's the gun on the table. "Private Jones, aye. Come out. Now what I want you to do is strip the gun down, naming the parts as you place them out, right? Ah. And then I'm going to ask you to assemble the gun. So take notice where you put those parts." Everybody was waiting for a good laugh, you know. No trouble. He stripped the gun, named the parts, assembled the gun, cocked it, fired it, gun ready for action, sir. They could not believe it. And what I'm trying to say is, in every man, there was the capability, if he was shown. It's already talking about teaching, but you've got to explain and teach and show and practice and practice. And I knew he could do it. And that made him very popular. He was no longer just Jonesy. "Hey, Private Jones, you want to see him on the gun?" And all I'm trying to say is, this is applicable to every man, every boy, if you can get a hold of him and get him interested. I'm a bloke that always believes in what they call the positive attitude. I believe, greatly or wrongly, that with me there is what some people call a spiritual guide. Some call them some call it another name, but it's a somebody or something which is neither in me nor out of me, but it's with me, and at various times it's like poetry. I can learn poetry without learning it. You know, if I'm interested, I seem as though I can absorb it. And I believe that this is in everybody. If they believed that there is something in them or with them, that'll give them a push. Spiritual guide, somebody described it as. That they have the Holy Spirit and all this, and religion. And I think, rightly or wrongly, yes, there must be. Because of the other people of other religions whom I've met, and I've met quite a lot of them, who believed in something, and they didn't know what it was. And I believe it is the positive attitude, if you can develop it. Not always, it'll not always work out, but it'll help to get you there. And if you can instill that into the men they've got, they seem as though they believe it.
Men in your same rank as you that had platoons wouldn't necessarily have that approach.
Big one?
There would be, in other words, bad sergeant majors who didn't have that approach.
Oh, no. You see, one of my first things I did when I got to France was have an argument with the regimental sergeant major. He was a little man. He came from a Lancashire regiment as a brigadier. And the first place he went to, he told the men, he had all the sergeants that day, say, in a drill hall, this is before the war, and he said, "Where I come from, they call me the little black bastard." And there was a sergeant who got up, he says, "Permission to speak, Sergeant Major?" "Yes." "Well," he says, "so far as we are concerned, you're still the little black bastard." And one of the first things I experienced in France was an argument with him. One man hadn't filled his water bottle. There was a man so like the Dunn I'm talking about. You nearly had to fill the bottle for him. And the RSM Dunn, another Dunn, was making a big show in front of some sergeant majors. "That man hasn't got his water bottle filled. He's never even got his water bottle filled." And he made such a show, "Excuse me, sir. There's only one reason why he hasn't got his water bottle filled."